church in the centre of Warwick. And he has had a long life or a long interest in organisational storytelling, has written two books published by SCM, one titled Leading by Story, and the other Kingdom Stories, and also a Grove booklet, The Power of Story to Change a Church. So it's wonderful to have us, to have you with us, Vaughan, and we're really looking forward to you know, what you tell us and the discussion that you invite us to have. So thank you.
Thank you, Nikki. Thank you very much for the invitation to be here. It's great to be here this evening. I was just going to begin by saying a little word about MoDEM, if that's okay.
Can I just pause you a second? Because I suppose I sort of introduced you, and then I was going to get everyone to introduce themselves. That's
well,
right.
Indeed.
And then come back to you. I don't know whether I've done that the right way around or not, but I thought it was nice.
I think that's a great idea.
So I just thought we could each go round, and if I sort of go around my screen, and if we could just say, you know, our name. I think the organisational setting in which we work or have worked, if we're retired, or maybe we are involved in, you know, voluntary activities which in our retirement. So something about the organisational setting that we're in our working, paid or unpaid lives, and just a sentence about what we do. So just, I mean, very briefly. And Margaret's at the top left-hand corner of my screen. So if I ask you to start, if that's all right, Margaret, then I'll...
Yep, top left sounds about right. I'm Margaret Joachim. I have retired from being paid as an IT program manager, but find myself volunteering rather heavily with a political party. I've also, to my amazement, become an area director of Ordinance. And I attempted what is laughably called my spare time to do a research project. And I seem to be running all the technology this evening. So if we all crash and burn, it's my fault.
Thank you. I'm sure it won't be your fault and I won't crash and burn. So we'll be fine. Rob.
Yeah, I'm Rob Fox. I've just retired from a long career in tax, mostly with HM Revenue and Customs. And I'm based up in just outside Newcastle in the northeast. I'm also the treasurer of CRISM.
And Peter?
Peter Hill, recently retired from ministry in the Church of England in East London, the East End, and I've sat at Vaughan's feet in the past.
Great, thank you. And Peter, other Peter, Peter Selby.
I'm Peter Selby. I'm a hospital doctor in Manchester.
Great. And Steve Best?
Yeah, I've got a background in business and IT consultancy, bespoke. I've enjoyed working with people, sitting next to them and streamlining their businesses. So I've done that. I've done social enterprise for the last 10, 11 years. The reason I know about this and I'm here is through Robert Fox, who is obviously on this one. Through Faith in Business. So I'm just interested to hear more. So, yeah.
Thank you. And Catherine?
Hi, everyone. I'm Catherine Binns. I am a hospital chaplain. I'm also still registered as a nurse. I've just revalidated recently and plan not to revalidate ever again after the 3 years. And I've got Tandle in the room, my rescue dog, who is also working at Bolton and paid in treats.
Thank you. And Ali? Can't hear you, sorry.
I'm Ali. I work in IT. Technology is making life difficult this evening, and I'm based in, I've just moved from a law background into a university background, so I'm just getting used to working in a different environment.
Thank you. Timothy.
I'm a parish priest in the Swansea Valley of one church parish, and last Sunday I permanently closed the church. That doesn't mean I'm retired yet or that I've got nothing to do, because we're actually in our diocese in the middle of reorganising all our ministry areas. So part of today has been sorting out the reorganisation and moving and shaking of the new ministry area we're going to be part of. I'm also what is called the Bishop's Office of a Training and Ministerial Development, which is a little bit like the Church of England having a Director of Ministerial Development. And I'm also the Secretary of MoDem. And where management interests me is that I'm also a chartered manager with a chartered management institute.
Thank you. Rebecca.
Hello, I'm Rebecca Craven, normally in Manchester, currently in Somerset. I'm rather a poor line, so I might, if I disappear, that might be why. Recently retired. Engaged in house clearance at the moment because my mum died recently. So, yeah, busy enough with that.
Thank you. And Phil?
Yep, Phil Aspinall from Coventry. I'm spending my time between Coventry and Christchurch. Spent my working life working in the chemical industry in various forms. Started off in a large chemical company, then worked for consultancy, and latterly working as a self-employed consultant. I'm very interested in all these different ways of working with people and alongside people, and I guess the stories that come out of that. I'm also a member of the Chrism Committee.
And I'd better add myself now. I'm Nikki von Benson, and I have retired, but my career took me from through the legal profession, the church, and family mediation. I now let rooms to counsellors and therapists and artists in a building I own in Cheltenham, and I also lead walking holidays for a holiday company. So that's me. So I think that's everybody, isn't it? On my screen, nobody else is hiding, no? And so pass over back over to you, Vaughan, and ask you to take us forward.
Thank you, Nikki, and thank you to everyone for the invitation to join you this evening and be part of this discussion, which I'm really looking forward to. Just a word about MoDem, which is a hub for leadership management and ministry, which started in the late 80s, early 90s, I think. And I've been involved off and on throughout that period. And just before the first lockdown, I became chair of MoDem. So it has, as they say, been interesting times. We have published a series of three books between 1997 and 2008 on leadership and ministry. Management and Ministry was the first, Creative Church Leadership was the second, and How to Become a Creative Church Leader was the third. At the moment, we have an annual conference. Now, that kind of goes in a little rotation. So we have a day conference 1 year, and then we have an overnight conference at Sarum College the next. And our next conference is on the 21st to 22nd of November at Sarum. And our keynote speaker will be Professor Margaret Heffernan from the University of Bath. Her latest book, Uncharted, How to Map the Future Together. Although she doesn't talk about having any kind of faith commitment herself, one of her key metaphors in this book is using cathedrals as a way of dealing with organisational uncertainty, as a metaphor for dealing with organisational uncertainty. She will be our keynote speaker. So I do recommend her book and our conference to you. So, and the other thing that we do is that we have, since the start of the first lockdown, we have a book club, and that meets probably once every couple of months. And our next book club will be on the 26th of October. And the book, quite often we mix the books up. So this year, this time the book will be Year of the Runaways by Sanjeev Sahota. And all of that kind of information is on the MoDem website. So there's my little plug, my advertisement for MoDem, and it gives you a little bit of background into how MoDem functions and kind of what we do. So, Margaret, could you put up the first of the slides for me? So in our book club, our last book was Susan Bowman's How to Lead When You Don't Know Where You're Going, Leading in a Liminal Season, which was published in 2019. And one of the quotes, there were many quotes that stood out for me, was when she wrote, "To receive the story of another is to bear witness to his or her experience. It is a sacred act. When I tell you who I am and what is important to me about being here, I invite you into my journey and vice versa." So I'm going to say a little bit about my journey and my story into how I am interested in stories and organizational stories and kingdom stories. I'll say a little bit about what I mean by kingdom stories as well. And then I've got some questions for us to discuss as we go into breakout groups. So if Margaret puts up the next slide, you can see where it all started. So this is where I began my interest in stories. So as a freshly minted deacon in 1985, a deacon in the Church of England, I was part of the parish of St. Thomas just outside Farnham, which was a single parish with three centres of worship. And I was at Brambleton Hall, which was a church plant built in the 1950s. And at the end of my first year of ministry, having been ordained priest, my training incumbent, who I'm still very good friends with, said to me, in effect, "Right, here you are, mate, over to you." So Brambleton Hall was kind of given into my charge. And as a new, keen, enthusiastic minister, priest in the Church of England, I was very keen to put my years of theological training and formation to work and see what was what. And two books that had been particularly important to me were Avery Dulles's Models of the Church and H. Richard Niebuhr's Christ and Culture. Now, Models of the Church, in essence, does what it says on the tin. It looks at different models and metaphors for the church and how they work. And Richard Niebuhr's book, Christ and Culture, does something similar for how church as an organization relates to the culture around it. So I spent, I gave over a couple of the council meetings to exploring Models of the Church, and a little while later, about 6 months later, we looked at Niebuhr's Christ and Culture. And I came away from those meetings, how can I put this, downcast and disheartened, because people didn't want to particularly talk about the metaphors of the church that they use, or how the Brambleton interacted with the culture of the local council estate that was surrounding it. What they wanted to do was just tell stories about where they'd come from and where things were at. So you will see there that you may not see, but Brambleton is on the corner of a couple of roads, and there were people who could remember the vicar who built Brambleton Hall sitting at the corner of the road with a bowl in front of him, asking for money so that we could build this community hall. This was in the 1950s. And stories like that really engaged people. I'm afraid my enthusiasm for Niebuhr and Dulles didn't. So after 4 years at Brambleton, I went off then to the next slide, to the next stage of my story. So I went to be chaplain at the University of Bath, where I inherited a very strong ecumenical group of chaplains from my predecessor. Now, if you know Bath and the university, it's a 1970s campus university out from the centre of town on a hill overlooking Bath. And for the first year, students would have a place on campus, and there was a chaplaincy centre right in the centre of the university where we would hold services on a Sunday and during the week. And then in the second year, students would all have to vacate the campus and go and live in the town. And all my ecumenical colleagues had a link church in the centre of town. They were involved in city centre ministry and were able to keep their contacts with students much more easily than I was on top of the hill. Even on the Sunday morning, the buses didn't start running in time to allow people to get up to the 10:30 morning service. So I formed a link with Christchurch, and this also was a church plant, from the 1800s by the predecessors of the Oxford movement. So you might call it liturgical Catholic. And in the congregation were a number of people from the university, including the director of music, who was part of the School of Management at the university and was part of a small group of lecturers who were interested in how all kinds of organisations told their stories and what sense they made from that process of organisational storytelling. So that's where I got into things. And I began, also at that time, I read a book called Congregation Stories and Structures by an American academic called James Hopewell, and began to just think that actually all that experience of hearing people's stories at Brambleton Hall actually could make a great deal of sense and be of enormous value. So I began some research into Christchurch and the Chaplaincy Centre and their organisational stories, and that was my PhD work. Margaret, can we move on if that's okay? I then went on to be vicar of Chewton Mendip and involved in the vocations and director of ordinance for the Diocese of Bath and Wells. And there was much less about organisational storytelling in my ministry at that point, but there was some very interesting personal stories and how people were making sense of their lives through their personal story and how they were feeling called by God in and through the stories that they told. And then I moved on yet again. Margaret, if that's okay. And this is where I am at present. So St. Mary's is that church in the centre of Warwick, if you know Warwick. But we're all part of a much greater and larger team. So when I arrived in 2003, there were six congregations, six churches. There are now five. One of the key things that happened in the Warwick team was in 2010, we were asked by our bishop to undertake a review of our ministry. And the way in which we did that was through asking the congregations to tell their stories and to share their stories with each other. And that changed the whole nature of the ministry in Warwick. It did a number of things. First, it enabled people to feel that their story was being heard and the story of their congregation was being heard. And sometimes you can see that St. Mary's is quite a sizable building and is dominant on the skyline in Warwick. And there was an understandable feeling amongst some of the smaller churches that basically, you know, their story was important, but it wasn't being heard. And so that review enabled that to happen, and also a greater level of organizational trust and personal trust to develop between all those who are involved in that organization. I wrote up the review of that in a book called Untold Stories in Organizations, which came out, I think, in about 2014, and used the metaphor of aquifers, stories bubbling up like aquifers from underground, as a way of understanding all of that. So that's my story, and how it gives you a sense of how I have come to appreciate, understand, value, and work with stories across the ministry of the Church of England. That is a very specific form of organisational storytelling. But I hope there are some ideas, some parallels, some instances that where you might be able to make connections from your own organisational storytelling and experience of it. I'm just going to say a little bit more about some of the writing that I've done. How are we doing for time? I think we've got a little more, if that's okay. Margaret, could you pop up the next slide for me, please? Thank you. So the director of music at the Christchurch was David Sims, and he has gone on to write a number of books, edit a number of books, and he and I collaborated with this book, Leading by Story, which came out in 2017. And one of David's observations was leadership, when done well, requires contributions from many different people, and it works best when the appropriate person steps forward to lead at a particular time and then steps back to enable someone else to step forward and lead. And I think he and I would say that storytelling in organizations is a shared activity. It's something that everybody can and should contribute to. And so we talk about both storytelling and story sharing. And I'll come back to some of our insights in a moment. In 2019, I did some further research into what I have called kingdom stories. And kingdom stories are based on what I've termed engaged eschatology. Margaret, could you pop up the next slide for me? Thanks. Is there one? Brilliant. Thank you. That's wonderful. So those who know about eschatology and how it is used to understand Jesus' teaching about the kingdom and the end times, there are various perceptions to do with eschatology. It is something that is just only for the future, when the kingdom comes and you see the Son of Man coming on the clouds, or it's something that Jesus was inaugurating with his ministry, and then with the events of Good Friday and Easter Sunday. But by engaged eschatology, this is a quote from early on in the book, I mean, Jesus was always looking for signs of God's kingdom while encouraging his disciples and listeners to do the same. Such glimpses of God's activity in people's lives and in the wider world are what I identify as kingdom stories. So kingdom stories can be told anywhere and everywhere. They can be in the church, but equally they can be outside of the church. We see signs of the kingdom as much in the world which is created by God as we do in the body of Christ. They are everywhere, and those are stories, again, to be told and shared. So just a couple of quick slides to finish with. So the conclusion to leading by stories included 10 tips that David and I produced. And David is always one for thinking outside the box and couldn't resist putting in an 11th one as well. So there are, the 10 tips are actually 11. In essence, know your story, know the story of Christianity, know the story of your church with a capital C. So know the story of your denomination or the denominations of which you have been or are a part. Know the story of your church with a small C, with your local church, and how those stories interact and work, and where they bubble up and from the aquifers that are the narrative aquifers in our church communities. Then we have a series about the importance of listening to the stories told about the past, listen to the stories being told in the present, and listen to the stories that are being told about the future. And then some practical tips about using opportunities to tell the story, use social media, encourage others to share in that narrative, and enable others to listen and hear different stories, those untold stories. And then just some comments about kingdom stories, just to say a little bit about how those so those, I would say, are the key five elements of kingdom stories. They embody God's action in our world. They can relate directly to Jesus' parables, teaching, and lived examples. But they can relate indirectly to Jesus' parables, teaching, and lived examples. They can often be about sense-making and seeking meaning, and they can often challenge individuals and communities. So that is my very quick gallop through some ideas about storytelling, my own sense of how I came to be involved and interested in these stories, and then a few insights from the work that I have done and David Sims and I have done together about the nature of storytelling in churches and the nature of kingdom stories in our world, but also in the communities that we seek to serve and be part of. My final slide is some questions that we might like to take into our groups, into our breakout rooms. So the first three are really about stories in general and stories that and may be part of the church, but may be part of the other communities and organisations that you are involved with. And the fourth question about where is God present in those kingdom stories that we are encountering. The other thing I would just say in conclusion, and that's that third question, what stories have the most power and who is telling them? People can often think that story is kind of benign. It's a novel, it's a parable, it's a fairy tale. But actually, stories are ways of exercising power, and particularly exercising power in organizations. The way in which a story is told, and who is allowed to tell that story, and which stories are not permitted or are suppressed or are marginalized, is also critical and important. So as we're thinking and reflecting and talking about stories, the question about power, I think, will never be far from our thoughts, our reflections, and our analysis. Thank you, Margaret. That was really helpful. Thank you very much for sharing those slides. I think we've been joined by one or two people since we started, haven't we? Hi, Rachel. Hi, David. I think you've joined us. Margaret, how are you doing with our breakout rooms? Are you on top of all of that? I mean, does anybody want to ask any questions before we break out? Or shall we break out and discuss it in smaller groups?
I should think probably if we went into smaller groups, unless anybody, has anybody else got a question or this stage? Then we'll have an opportunity of feeding back from each of the groups, if that would be work well. So if somebody in each group could be prepared to feed back the essence of what the groups discussed.
Okay, I have all of you allocated to one group or another. How long do you want this section to go on for? Because I just need to program the shutdown.
I think we thought 30 minutes.
Right, okay. Okay, everybody ready to be whizzed into private corners of the internet? Okay, hold tight.
Welcome back. We've got everybody back. So what I was thinking was that maybe each group could just share briefly one or two points that they discussed, perhaps not to go through point by point or question by question, but maybe to share one or two things which came up in discussion which they felt was significant. And then maybe we have an open discussion. We've got actually 15 minutes now, looking at my watch. There may be time just for an open discussion. So that's a way of going forward. And would group, first group, I think I was in group four, but would group number one like to start?
Yeah, we wondered where all the time had gone so quickly. I think what we certainly agreed on is stories is important. The enabling people to tell the stories and be listened to, for those stories to be listened to, again, is important. And particularly at points of change, points of transition. Tim mentioned the church his church has just closed down this last Sunday. That's a point of transition. So it's important that people's stories are told and heard and listened to. I related about a business transition or where an office is closed down, for example, or a business is closed down, and the importance of enabling people to tell the stories and also not dismissing them. The stories may differ in how they relate to what others perceive as being what the truth or what actually happened, but every story has a validity, particularly to the teller, and in that respect needs to be taken seriously. Going back to Keir Starmer's thing about he said the victim should always be believed. I disagree. The victim should always be taken seriously. Is a much better way to put it. In that respect, the storyteller should always be taken seriously and never dismissed.
Thank you. Anything else? Well, let's go on to group two. Yeah, unless there's anything else anybody wanted to say from group one, quickly look around. So can we, group two is...
Yeah, well, I'm reporting from group two. There's just three of us. I'm a Methodist, Catherine Church of England, and Steve, who's a Baptist. So we had a good ecumenical group. We believe that in some ways the story we tell is very much related to the situation we're in. And because we were actually in a group, what we found ourselves doing was telling our own sort of very short history of our development as priests or ministers or whatever. So we first of all, number one, we learned quite a lot by talking about our own background, our own story, where we come from and where we were. So that was really a kind of answer to question one in a way. I think one thing common to us, and particularly to Steve, who's been an evangelist working between churches, was that we really wanted to see if we could overcome the story that was so related to a particular denomination that we weren't open to other people's stories, that we didn't get, as it were, just hooked into the story of the greatness of Methodism or the greatness of the Church of England. You know, that there was an ecumenical story that needed to be told. We thought there was a difference really between the stories you tell in church and the stories that you hear and tell in the world. And we felt there was a big difference and sometimes a great gulf between what church people talked about and what people in this world of business and, difficulty with cost of living and shops that were shutting and what the shopkeepers told, and how you link those two stories is a very difficult question. And of course, the huge issue of language. I mean, how do you translate it? Steve was very, very much concerned with relating this to the biblical story in the biblical language and the truths in the Bible. But how actually we were saying, how do you make that real in the world in which we live? And I think finally, we would just want to raise the question as whether the coming of the digital age and Zoom and what we're actually doing tonight is actually changing the way in which the church communicates, and whether those stories are going to be quite different in future. What's the gains and the losses in the digital age of storytelling?
Thank you. Thank you. So group three.
I'll try and make a start at this, because what we did was share more reflection than anything terribly structured. Peter was telling stories of being working in parishes when the mines were closing around Nottinghamshire and that area, and how the stories they told, listening to the stories, because it validated the people, but also the way the women became the keepers of the stories. And sometimes the results that came through that weren't, or might not look on the surface, as good stories, you know, very touching, I suppose, and painful stories of how men couldn't cope with women suddenly being not just the keeper of the stories, but safely domesticated, but the keeper of the story and carrying it forward. So that we, in a sense, not blinkering ourselves to the reality of the stories we were hearing. And I said something about, I'm a URC minister, but not directly attached to a church, but I kind of try and work as a bridge. So if I'm invited to lead worship, I will try and do something to create a bridge and sell stories from the world, as it were. And the difference in the churches that want to hear that and the churches that only want to hear their own stories. And that's a real, I find that really challenging and incredibly painful some of the time. And listening to the stories on the outside of people who still think there are X, Y, and Z hoops to jump through before they could even cross the threshold of a church. But coming back again and again and again to the validity of listening to people's stories and really hearing them.
Thank you. Now, in group four, we were sufficiently disorganised to not to choose anybody to be spokesman. So I don't know, I mean, Ali or Peter, do you like to say anything, or do you want me to do it, or silence? Okay, I'll say a little bit. We were looking at, towards the end, at the tension between individual and community stories. That's what I heard. The question of whether the individual stories maybe overwhelmed or overtook or were larger than the community story. Then who was the, what stories became dominant? Was it individual voices that were louder? That whole question of whether narrative and story was more powerful than polemic. So I think those were some of the things we looked at, and we talked about, the different aspects of personal story as well. I don't know, Ali or Peter, or Vaughan, sorry, I should have added. Did you want to add anything to that? Looking at you. You're going to, yes.
I was struck, on the difference between Peter's story and Ali's story. Ali was talking about the importance of an overall narrative in the church and how the church had come together and produced a coherent or collective shared narrative. Peter was talking out of his experience in the NHS and how the NHS's affirmation of diversity meant that it was harder for a coherent shared narrative to be come together, or even whether that was desired. So I was interested in the diversity, and that I think goes back to something, was it that David said in from their group, that you know a difference between how story works or doesn't work in churches and how it does or doesn't work in organizations. And I thought that was a really interesting, you know, is story always fundamentally different in churches compared to, kind of, for want of a better term, secular organizations?
Thank you. So we've got sort of 5 or 6 minutes. I'm just to throw it open for general discussion and conversation.
If I can just mention a couple of things that I think were significant in our conversation. The obvious, that we too little respect the fact that God is out there in the stories of people. You know, we're trapped inside our church walls some of the time, you know, even if we work as an MSE or out in the community as a chaplain or whatever. Nevertheless, we tend to default to the fact that God's inside rather than outside. And part of the mission and evangelism of the church, I think, is in curing people's stories and encouraging them to see that God is in their lives, and even if they don't acknowledge it at first. And that relates to one of my regrets after all these years in ministry, is not the demise, but the decrease, it seems to me, in my experience of pastoral visiting, whether it's ministerial, you know, ordained ministerial or lay pastoral visiting, because that's where you hear people's stories. And that is really important. It's as missional as anything else, but some ministers decry it as a waste of time because it doesn't build a church. My view is quite the opposite. But so those two things I just want to throw in.
Thank you.
I think just following on from what Peter said, it's the glory of God. And I think we are to gather together to stir one another up, that we do go out into the world. And obviously, Chrism is part of that, that it's within the workplace. And it is to give those testimonies out there as well, that we believe that's God's goodness and we're made in the image of God. So, you know, if God isn't given the glory, it's usually that people are giving each other the glory and patting each other on the back, and there becomes self-praise. And that's not what we want to see. We want to say to people, hey, this goodness comes from God. He reigns on the righteous and the wicked, as it says. And he loves people, and he's there, and he created this world. So I think it's important to be out in the world and get that witness over and be seen to be giving glory to God. Because, as I said, if glory isn't being given to God, then it's usually, aren't I good? And people are sort of more about their self and building up. And there's a lot of psychology, obviously, that backs that up as well with, you know, you're good, you're brilliant, you're fantastic. And it's we are, but we're made in God's image, and it's God in us. Then it's the glory that God gives us, all the things we've got. So I think that is great news in itself. And we know that he sent his son. So it is an introduction to the gospel, but it's through those great stories of saying it's God's glory, not ours. And have a look at this and encourage people in the world to do it. And we can only do that in the world. We can't do it, as Peter says, within the confines of the church building. So thanks.
That reminds me of how stories are told in art. And we had an event a few years ago in the Church in Wales where it was facilitated in Cardiff Museum. And as we gathered stories about flourishing, we were asked to go around the museum and see what we noticed. And what was really interesting in art is that as soon as we entered the Reformation period, the art in the museum changed from religious art to self-portrait. So the art historian and, you know, historians of the early modern age would talk about the rise of humanism. And it just struck me how the story had changed about the vision of God to human achievement at the point of the Reformation, which the Reformation story literally would claim that it was the other way around. So there's the art of story and the story of art. And yet there's also the verbal story of religious movements.
And the stories, I mean, I'm always drawn to remember, it's a key of my Christian view, really, of the mission statement we have. And I paraphrase it, to celebrate the holiness of life and to see and tell the Christian story in our places of work. And that seeing, I've always say to people, what we're about is seeing the Christian story before we tell it and seeing it in our places of work. And I guess that that's what we claim to be able, or we claim to be trying to do, is to see where we work, in the jobs we do, in the ordinariness of that work, that Christian story unfolding, and to be able then to interpret and tell it, but we see it first and then tell it.
I think that must be right, Nikki, but I wonder how well we equip ourselves to be able to interpret those stories in the light of the overarching story of God's relationship with his creation, is starting with creation, leading through the whole sweep of the biblical narrative, and whether within individual stories we're able to reflect a Christian hope into that, back to the individuals, which I think is the sort of thing that Steve was saying it's important for us to be able to do.
Yes. And that might well be a good place to sort of pause or end our conversation as the time draws to a close. Unless anybody else has got anything there they wanted to add in the last couple of minutes. So if I just take the opportunity then of thanking you all for coming and joining in what's been a really worthwhile conversation and stimulating, and of course to thank particularly Vaughan, thank you so much for stimulating us and encouraging us and steering us into what's been a fabulous evening. So
Nikki, could I just add very briefly right at the end, thank you so much for that exchange between you and Peter, which it seemed to me to be a really helpful way of approaching and encapsulating what I've tried to say about kingdom stories. So I thought that was a really, really lovely place to end. So thank you very much to both of you for that exchange.
Thank you. Good. Well, have we got any notices or anything to announce, Margaret? Apart from, yes, we've got the reflective weekend in February. So do book up for that as the flyers go out. And is there anything, and the next Wednesday, our next session, we got to sing everybody's
I've not got any particular notices, but I believe a journal is going to appear in the near future, and that will have some sort of useful dates in it. So please read your journal if you're a CRISM member.
And if you're not a CRISM member, then you're very welcome to become a CRISM member.
Absolutely.
And you'll get a copy of this extraordinary and marvellous journal with all the dates and everything else in it. So, but thank you very much for joining us and being with us. It's been a great evening. And thank you, as I say, thank you, Vaughan, for leading us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.